Hello and welcome to the Name Game. This is Bob Zanotti. I've just gotten off a train at one of Switzerland's most important rail junctions. We're just hearing an announcement for a train which continues on to Bellinzona in Ticino in the south. This is a fascinating spot we're at today in central Switzerland, and I hope you'll join me for the rest of the program to learn more. And welcome back to the Name Game. This is Bob Zanotti. Well, as I said at the very beginning, before our little bit of Swiss country music from this part of Switzerland, we are in central Switzerland. This is the Swiss heartland, both geographically and also politically and historically. We are at a little place. It's a small village about 18 kilometers east of the city of Lucerne. But our mystery location today is not in the canton of Lucerne, but in the canton of Schwyz, which is one of the original founding Swiss cantons, as a matter of fact, back in 1291. We are on a lake. Now, don't be confused, because if you look at a map of Switzerland, you will see the very large and rather complicated Lake of Lucerne, also called the Lake of the Four Forest Cantons in German. But we are at the bottom end of another lake. This one is the Lake of Zug, Z-U-G. We're at the bottom end of the Lake of Zug. Joining us for this edition of the Name Game is Killian Arnold. Mr. Arnold knows quite a bit about this particular location and this area. He works here. He spends all of his time in this area. Mr. Arnold, the lakes in Switzerland tend to have a lot of history, early history, because they were very attractive places to stay. And I think here in our mystery location, in this village, we have a lot of Celtic and Roman history. Is that correct? Going back a long time.
There is a bit of history in the town, and even a part of a defense wall can be found in the town.
Mentioned a defense wall?
Defense wall, yeah.
The great wall of where we are right now, against the Habsburgs, I believe. That was in the 1300s.
Yeah, against the Habsburg, and as well, it was some sort of a gate that the cattle couldn't run away in the early days.
So a dual function then, the protection and keep the cattle in.
That's the case.
Now you can still see, I think, 100 meters of that, and it's right over here on the right bank of the lake. I can't see anything here, it's too far away, but it can still be seen. And you have a Roman history too. The Romans were here even before Christ.
Yeah, it was a major settlement.
Now, unfortunately, there was also quite a bit of disaster which befell this particular area as well, and natural disaster and also disease going back in time.
Yes, the plague was here as well, and apart from that, disastrous landslide happened in the year 1806. And more than 400 people died during this accident.
There was a very strange thing that happened. As a matter of fact, I read about it, that the church, or part of the church, was under the landslide as well. And then almost miraculously, a few days later, the bells of the church appeared at the surface. And they were taken, and they can still be seen in a museum here. And a big fire, too, I think in 1719 or something, destroyed the whole village. There were a couple of fires here, but that was the worst one, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the worst one. Even during that fire, the village fountain was destroyed. And there's one fact which can be mentioned that's quite interesting about the village fountain. It's made out of local granite, and it's made out from one single piece. And it was a little bit destructed during this big fire.
But it's still there. I mean, I think it was built in originally 1621, if I'm not mistaken. And as you say, one piece of stone, and it's octagonal with eight sides, and I think it's considered almost unique in Europe. I don't know. That's the reputation anyway.
Yeah, that's the reputation. That's right. It's a unique fountain which can be found here.
Well, so much about disaster and problems that have befallen this place. It's really hard to believe, because as I face north here, we're at the very edge of the lake. It's in the late springtime now, and we still don't have a lot of tourist traffic, but it is so beautiful. There's something, I don't know, inspiring about being at the edge of a large lake like this. We have the rail lines to the left and to the right of us on both banks. And otherwise, it's very picturesque, it's very quiet, it's very peaceful. And I suppose a lot of people come to spend a quiet day just walking along the lake or having a meal. That's probably the tourism, I guess, in this particular case.
Yeah, the quietness, the silence is certainly one major advantage of the village. But apart from that, some other attractions, even so smaller attractions, can be found in the village.
For example?
There is a small animal park, extremely popular for families and young children. Can go have a look around, touch the animals. You can go up on a mountain quite close to the village, which is called Drigi.
Oh, that's the famous one, right?
Yeah, that's quite popular, and it's easy accessible. And last but not least, a small distillery can be found in the village, and there are tours provided by the distillery, and you can have a look in it. You can have an insight into the art of making brandies.
That's very close to your heart. We're going to talk about that, yeah. Mr. Arnold, because you work for that company, Fassbind. And this is a name which is known all over Switzerland. It's a very traditional company producing a very traditional product, and that is the product number one, I think, probably that most people would associate with you, is Kirsch, or cherry brandy. Why is Kirsch so important around here?
Kirsch is extremely important for the agriculture, for the economy of this part of the Switzerland. There are a lot of farmers who strongly depend on the cherries.
How long does it take to make Kirsch?
Yeah, it takes around 6 to 7 weeks. So the cherries get in, they must be fermented, and afterwards you have to distill them. But then it depends how long you would like to store the actual distillate. You can store it for several years, or you can go out on the market after a couple of weeks.
Now, there are so many different kinds of Kirsch. I've had Kirsch myself, and some seem very rough, others seem very smooth. What is basically the factor that determines the quality of a good Kirsch?
That's the product itself, the cherries.
The raw materials.
The raw material plus the art of the distiller.
Now, Kirsch, or Kirschwasser as it's also known, looks like water, but it's real fire water, of course. I mean, what is the average alcohol content of that?
It's around 40%.
I know that Kirsch is very often put in fondue, which is traditional in Switzerland, but also it's drunk as a digestive, as one says, after meals. It helps the digesting process. Is that correct?
That's correct, as every spirit does, yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of food, that's also one of the attractions here. There are boats during the high season here that people can take, and you can spend all day and even all evening just eating on these boats. They go up and down. A lot of people do that. In fact, fondue was mentioned, and you can have fondue on these boats too.
Yeah, they are the so-called fondue boats. You can enter the boat and have a look around the area while eating and enjoying a fondue.
It sounds like fun. And also folklore. This is a very traditional part of Switzerland, and I know that there are a lot of folkloric events which are still continued here at all times of the year. I think, for example, of the so-called Klaus Parade, which takes place in the wintertime near the Christmas time. This is very common here. And then you have other folkloric events, too.
During summertime, the major attraction is Swiss wrestling.
Schwingen.
Schwingen, yeah.
And of course, where there's Schwingen, there's also probably Swiss country music and a lot of good atmosphere. People follow this. This is a really serious sport with many people.
Yeah, people follow this, and they are in clubs, and they really take care of the traditions.
So you see the people around here at their best, really enjoying themselves.
can be said like that.
Okay. Killian Arnold, thank you very much for telling us about our mystery location. There is another industry which has put this particular mystery location on the map, and we're going to go there now, and it has to do with something completely different, light bulbs. Well, we began today's name game at the rail station in our mystery location, which actually serves two communities. Sometimes on a map you'll see these two communities linked together on the map. But right across from the station in our mystery location is a company which has been synonymous with this town, with this immediate area, for years and years and years. I've seen it for decades every time I've come through here. And that is the Luxram Company. And they are Switzerland's only manufacturer of incandescent lamps. Now, this has been part of this town for as long as I can remember, but the history of the company goes back a long ways, and the person who knows about that is Fritz Negeli of the Luxram Company. Mr. Negeli, exactly how old is Luxram?
Luxram, under the name Luxram, exists since 1952. But the company on this place was founded in the year 1898 when it was a shop for installing electrotechnical devices.
What about the product range today? I mean, I know you produce ordinary household, normal, the classic Edison incandescent lamp. But beside that, you have a lot of special products, which you really have a market niche on.
That's right. We produce for a market niche, especially lamps according to customer specifications, also in small quantities. They can be railway signal lamps, they can be train lamps, street signal lamps, and low temperature lamps, and so on.
When you say low temperature lamps, do you mean lamps which produce low heat or lamps for an operating environment where it's very cold? Is there a difference?
Well, it is for both. First, it is a low temperature because it is needed in minings, and they need to have low temperature because of the dangers of explosion in the mines.
And what's special about railway lamps or the lamps that they use still in some railroad cars here?
Well, the railway lamps, they are special in this kind that every train and every railway signal has its specifications, and we produce among those specifications for the customer his lamp.
And I believe they're usually low voltage, somewhere on 38 volts, 45 volts in there, certainly not the usual household type.
That's correct. Can be 24, can be 30, can be 48, and so on.
What about things like for photography, television, film studios, that sort of thing?
We do not produce those lamps because it needs a special equipment for. So we only are traditionally an incandescent lamp producer.
What about exports? Do your products go abroad?
Yes, they do. We have customers in Australia. We have customers in India. We have customers in Indonesia and in South America. And, of course, in whole Europe.
Thank you very much indeed, Fritz Negeli of the Luxram Company. And that does it for this edition of the Name Game. Just a quick reminder of the clue. We have been in central Switzerland, 18 kilometers east of the city of Lucerne. Our little village here is at the bottom end of the Lake of Zug, Z-U-G, and the name of our mystery village has four letters, and it is a very important rail connection site here as well, a very important rail station in Switzerland. This is Bob Zanotti reporting from our mystery location in central Switzerland in the canton of Schwyz, thanking you very much for being with us. The best of luck.